Mrs. Jonathan interviewing Mr. Reed Spalding here in Springfield. Mr. Spalding is owner of Spalding Tractor Company and is a Massey Ferguson dealer. He attended Western Kentucky University and got a degree in accounting from Bryan and Stratton Business School in Louisville. The first question I'd like to ask you, Mr. Spalding, is when and where were you born?
January 1st, 1930, Springfield, Kentucky.
What were your parents' names?
Reed Spalding and Louise Spalding.
What were your motives in going into farming?
Well, it's just been a family farm for 100 years.
So you just took it up with your dad, right?
And I just continued where he stopped.
How far back does your family go in farming?
Oh, 200 years.
200 years, so it's a family tradition.
Yeah.
Did you begin farming by yourself, or did you help your dad, or?
Well, I helped Dad for a while. He passed on. My brother and I went farming together. Mm-hmm. Partnership.
Does each member of your family have a specific job on the farm, or is the job just done?
No, we just do what's necessary.
Do what's necessary. Mm-hmm. Can you describe?
I have four sons, and three of them farm. One of them works at the farm marshal's office in Frankfort. He helps on weekends. And the oldest son, he surveys, a county surveyor, helps the county surveyor. Keeps him busy part of the time. The number three son is carries mail in the county here on Route 3A, substitute basis. And my youngest son, he works with me about all the time since high school.
So everyone stays pretty busy, huh?
Mm-hmm. They got their jobs to do.
Can you describe for me a typical day?
Typical day starts about 5 o'clock in the morning. We feed our baby calves. My wife gets on her mail route. I open up the office at the tractor company, and the other boys just do whatever's necessary to do that day.
Just get the job done and do a mm-hmm. good job at it. What was your farming operation like in the beginning?
We had a small farm. Dad left 75 acres out here in the Pleasant Grove neighborhood to Taylor and I, my brother and I. And that's all we had until about 12, 15 years ago. And I bought another farm at Pleasant Grove, sold it, then bought some land closer to Springfield. We've added all together about 7 or 8 different farms combined into one farm. They all join us for it. Makes it convenient. There's 1,350 acres in this farm, and it's all been acquired in the past 15 years.
So you've had a real day expansion mm-hmm. since you started. Did you begin farming with beef cattle or dairy cattle? Or
we began with beef cattle and kind of drifted towards the dairy part for cash flow reasons. We now have four grade A dairies, and three of them in operation. One of them is getting ready to reopen it in the spring of 86. And we milk about 300 cows now, add another 100 next spring. So we have about a 400 cow operation. Mm-hmm. The beef cattle have begun to kind of take a back seat.
That's a lot of milk, though. Did you have any problems when you started farming?
No, no problems in the beginning. I'm getting some problems now.
Getting some problems, yeah. Could you tell me sort of what problems you have now?
Well, what the farmer buys has tripled or even quadrupled in price, and what he sells is the same price it was 20 years ago, more or less.
So while the rest of the population is paying the regular price for what the farmer has to, too, even though he's not making as much as the other
right.
That's a hardship on everyone.
For example, the first Massey Ferguson 40 horsepower tractor I sold in 1960 was $1,800. Now the same 40 horsepower tractor is $12,000. But the farmer still gets $1.50, $2 for his corn, 30 cents for his hogs, and 50 cents for his cattle. So you can see where the squeeze is on the farmer today.
Seems rather unfair. Really does. How do government policies affect your operations?
Government policies in the past several years have been a big help to this operation. I took advantage of the PIC program in 83 or 82. I took advantage of the milk compromise program in 83 and 84. And I set aside some grain in the grain program every year, which helps a lot. Without government help and government subsidies, there'd be a lot less profit on this operation.
What effect has modern machinery had on your farm?
Modern machinery has cut some labor costs, not to the extent it's more profit-wise. Profit is better. It's just that you put the money in a different place. You buy a high-priced piece of machinery, you lay off a hand. I really don't know which is better, or to done it like they done it 20 years ago, or to go out here with a 100 horsepower tractor instead of 240 horsepower tractors. I hadn't decided yet which would be the best. So I would say the technological advance in agriculture hasn't really helped the farmer that much. It might have overproduced in some places where it made a hardship. Oversupply.
Do you make use of a computer to help with your farming?
No computer.
No computer. A lot of people have gone to those, I didn't know. What improvements have you made in feeding and health practices?
Well, the feeding thing is like it was even 20 years ago. We have silage, we have corn, we have hay. That hadn't improved much. On the medical side of it, the veterinarian side of it, we've learned to do most of our own veterinary work. We used to have a veterinarian practically daily with the three dairies, but now we only have them in emergencies where the milkman or myself or the boys can't handle the situation.
So that really helped cut down on the cost of medical care, and you can put more back into your farming operation. Has farming changed since you started, Romance?
Well, farming changed a lot, especially from on the tobacco end, it changed more than anything. When we were kids at home in our high school days, tobacco was an everyday job. You had to weed the tobacco beds, you had to hold the tobacco, chop out the tobacco, had to pull the suckers off the tobacco. But with the help of methylbromide gas for weed control, and MH-30 for sucker control, it's eliminated probably a third of the labor in tobacco. And the grading system is far different. Dad used to make six grades of tobacco. When he got to the warehouse, he couldn't pick them out. It was so much alike. But still, we had to put it in six different grades. And now we make three grades, and it's getting along real nice with it. That's the change I've seen in the methods of farming in the past 35, 40 years.
Going back to the cattle, what qualities do you look for when you're choosing one cattle over the other?
Well, milk production is what we're after, and we raise all of our own heifers. We buy very few outside cattle, roughly outside cows, and our cattle end of it, we keep all of our steers from our Holstein cows, and we sell about 100 fat steers a year, about 1,200 pound average. That's not much profit in that because they eat about what they're worth. But when I look for a cow, we really, the way we choose them is to give them a trial. We breed every heifer on the farm, give her a chance. And if she doesn't do well the first year, sometimes we give them another chance before she goes on the market as a pound cow. So her personal record and production determines how long she gets to stay.
So you really don't really choose between the breeds, just the...
No, we've like I told you, the beef cattle have kind of taken a back seat. The only beef cattle we have anymore are the steers we raised out of her Holstein cow.
Do you think it's possible for small farmers to compete against large ones? And do they have any advantages that the large farmer can't offer?
The small farmer, most of them have outside income. They work at a factory, they drive a truck, they work somewhere besides the farm. If they don't, unless they've got an awfully good start and some money ahead, they're in for trouble. Because a small farm cannot make it. The expenses are too great.
So to be a small farmer, it's more of a hobbyist in a way.
You'd better have some backup somewhere.
Yeah. And what do you see in the future for dairy and beef cattle farming?
No, I think the future's going to be all right. Depends on the individual. I've learned a few lessons the past 5 years that I won't repeat. I won't buy any more land till the land prices come somewhere in line with where you can make a profit on it. And the third world countries have begun to produce so much of their own food. In fact, our big importers are now exporters of food. So what the problem is going to be, it's going to be the American farmers have to take care of themselves and have some kind of organization where they can control their output so the supply won't be so much greater than demand, which kills the price structure. So we can hope that in the future we'll have a base on these cows, we'll have a base on about everything without even the government's help. Just let the let them set the base and let the supply and demand control the price.
Did the grain embargo of the mid-1970s affect your farm very much?
It affected everybody's farm because it made the third world countries realize what they could get for the grain and their commodities. People never sold it before, took advantage of it. The Russian people can't seem to produce enough for their own needs, and they are our biggest importer of American grain and commodities. And when they were cut off for whatever period of time, they looked for other sources, Canada and Australia and some parts of South America, put a lot of commodities in Russia. And that has definitely hurt. I don't think it'll ever be completely recover some of those markets. And another thing that's hurting us on our exports right now is a lot of countries subsidize the exports so the farmer will make a profit. The USDA don't subsidize exports.
Do you think they should have a tax on the import goods to help the farmer, or what do you think the solution should be to that?
I think it on imports should be taxed or tariffed, whichever word you want to use, as the way they tax or tariff what we send them. Mm-hmm. My understanding in Japan, automobiles have a tax. It's terrific. When a General Motors car runs off of the boat in Tokyo Harbor or whatever city, they pay a big tariff, a big tax. Japanese cars come off with no tax hardly at all. That's not fair.
During milking, I've noticed that they've gone to stainless steel tanks. Can you give me the reason behind that?
Well, stainless steel is easy to clean. It's a lifetime investment. It's got a longer life, easier to clean. Makes better quality milk, easier to cool. That's about the reason for it. And I feel like in the future they'll find something better, but right now stainless steel is the best.
With many American farmers going under, can you give a reason for that and what they could be doing to bring themselves out of the situation?
The majority of farmers have fallen by the wayside in the past 2 or 3 years or even 5 years is interest rates. Most of them are in debt. They've bought their farm on a 6% or 7% basis. When interest went to 15 to 20%, they just couldn't make the payments. And they borrowed money to pay interest with, and when you borrow money to pay interest, you compound your problems. The farmer that was out of debt, he's still sitting on top.
Do you think planning and organizing would even help with that? Or do you think
It would for the ones going to get into it in the future. If you don't have a solid footing, don't take the step, because you're going to slip.
What would you use, if you were in that situation, what kind of plans would you use to try to bring yourself out?
If I was in a no-profit situation, I would have to either produce more or get in some other endeavor to help the profit out. I don't know what the answer would be. Maybe pray for lower interest rates would be one thing. Some of these young fellows that had borrowed everything that they could to buy land, machinery, livestock, buildings, trucks, suddenly realize they can't pay interest on what they borrowed. So the creditors just kind of gobble them up.
What advice would you give to someone considering beef cattle or dairy cattle farming his career?
Well, if you have to farm, you know, they think they have to farm, but it's a bad business right now. The whole farm economy is the most depressed economy in the nation, other than maybe steel workers. I couldn't give advice about going into it. Were they to inherit a farm and ask me what should do, milk or grow beef, I said they should milk, because they can keep the cash flow better and they can really see what they're doing. The beef cattle, if you can buy cheap and sell high, it's wonderful. But when you buy high and sell cheap, you're lost. And that can happen very easily to a beginner that hasn't had the experience of the years of hard knocks it taught him. So my advice would be to a young fellow beginning to go dairy and hope to have some kind of controls in the years where he'll make a profit on his operation.
So you wouldn't encourage someone going to farming unless they were planned or inherited it? Really, you know, like out of high school or anything, you wouldn't really encourage anybody to... just to buy their own farm?
No, they couldn't buy it. They can't make enough money to pay interest on this land like it is. The only thing an 18-year-old can do would be to rent a farm, lease a farm, or sharecrop a farm until he got his inventory of cattle and machinery built up sufficient to warrant purchase of a farm. If he doesn't, there's no way a person can borrow the money, buy the land, buy the cattle, buy the machinery. He cannot make it, no matter how good the man is, or how much good the weather is to him, or how good his management, he cannot do it with today's prices.
What changes would you like to see the government make in the future to help the farmers?
The government should pass an interest ceiling of 6%. They had it years ago. The three countries in the world that are really, really booming right now is Japan, Switzerland. The other one I can't recall right now. Japan's prime rate is 5.9% or 5.6%. Switzerland is about 6%. The United States used to have that position. They were a growing nation. Now the prime rate has been as high as 20%. And you let the other nations pass us. The only way we'll ever take our place against a leader, industrial-wise, farm-wise, is to have some kind of a regulation on interest rates. Because when a fellow buys a purchase, goes in debt $100,000, he borrows the money at 6 or 7%, he figures $6,000 would be his annual expense on that interest expense. And all of a sudden, here comes a 20% interest loan, he's got $20,000 to pay on that same loan. And he cannot do it. He's a hardship case at once, immediately. So That's what I'd like to see the government do. I'd like to see them put a ceiling on interest of around 6%. And that would stabilize the farm economy quicker than anything else.
As a farmer, do you feel there are ways to reverse the trend, the way American people feel about farming, their loss of respect for the farmer?
Well, they haven't lost respect for them. They just want their food cheap so they can get it, which anybody would. I think 17% of the average American's pay goes to food. Some countries, 80% of their pay goes to food. So you can see what the gap is. The American public consumer, as the words like to be used, is the consumer. They're getting a double bargain at the farmer's expense. Because the farmer's getting the same thing he got for his hogs and his cattle 30 years ago, but what he buys is triple, and its interest rate is almost triple in some cases. So there's no way to really get the consumer to feel sorry for the farmer, because they want their food cheap, but they're going to have to, sooner or later, pay a little more for their milk and their bread and their meat, because the farmer can't survive.
What about the aid the farmer's getting from the government? This makes other people mad because it's cutting off social services. Can you give them an argument that they should give the aid to the farmer instead of social service?
Every dollar the government, the farmer gets, of course, when there's $1 billion allocated to agriculture, only about 10% of it actually gets the farmer. The other 9% is in administrative cost to get the machinery set up to get the little check to the farmer. So out of $1 billion, he's only getting $1 million. And out of that $1 million, the consumer probably derives $1 billion worth of benefits in their food budget. So they cannot, in good conscience, think the government's wasting money on the farmer, because it creates a whole lot of jobs for the people that are living in the city that work with agriculture and for agriculture. So when the government appropriates money to the farmer, he's not appropriating money, he's appropriating to everybody.
Many people are becoming vegetarians today. Can you give them a reason that they should reverse and go back to eating meat as opposed to their diet now? Because,
well, if they want to really be strong and healthy, they should have some protein. And red meat and milk is the best source of protein there is, the cheapest source and the best source. A lot of these vegetarians, I think if you push them, they'd fall over. They're just not strong enough to actually do a day's work. They don't have to work. Most of them are retired or some kind of vocation that takes very little physical exercise. But a working man has to have his meat and potatoes, bread and meat and potatoes. No, he can't work.
What changes in agriculture could we make to draw more people into farming as the American farmer slowly dwindling out to smaller numbers?
He's going to continue to dwindle as long as his expenses are growing and his income is declining. There's no answer to it. Except the two or three things I mentioned, we're going to have a little more for what we sell. We're going to have interest rates stabilized so we know what we're doing. Because a young fellow bought a farm 20 years ago to sell on a 6% loan, and his farm payment was $12,000, and first thing you know, the interest is 20%, and his farm payment's $40,000. He's gone right there.
satisfied your expectations you had of it?
Well, we're a little disappointed with it right now, but in the past, farming is good to us. When you planted your corn, or your tobacco, your hay, you knew you'd have get a fair price out of it, a fair profit. But with seed corn, $75 a bushel, used to be $12. Fertilizer used to be $50 a ton, now $200 a ton. Used to buy you a tractor for $2,500, now they're $25,000. Just on and on down the line. Repair people charge you double when they come to the farm, repair a refrigerator or a compressor. Veterinarian comes out, the farmer charge you $50, and he'll say, that's all the cow gets out of it, probably. Everything, by the time you sell your crop and pay your bills, most of the time there's nothing left. And it used not to be that way. I've seen a drastic change in farming in the last 20 years. And I don't know really what the expectations is. Hey, could be too enthused over those kind of figures. So I'd say my expectations are a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Was farming like you imagined it when you started in by yourself?
No. When I was younger, I said, give me 100 acres of good land, I'll make it. Now I take 1,000 acres of good land, you still can't make it. So it's nothing like I thought it ought to be or should be or would be.
Would you like to add anything about the condition of the American farmer and how the farmer themselves can help improve their condition?
Well, it's out of the farmer's control now because we've got so much production, we've got so much overhead, so much cost. The only thing that would really help the farmer, this is, I say it sincerely, it affects me and everybody, is interest rates to come down to a reasonable figure. Most farmers have their money borrowed from the farm credit system, and their rates now are 14 to 14.5%. The national prime rate now is 9.5%. This is a reverse situation. It used to be the farm credit system was always a little cheaper than local banks. They were cheaper than the prime rate. In the past few years, the situation is reversed, and that's not helping the farmer any. If that situation would go back to normal, if the bank charges 10, the farm credit system should be 8, like it was in the past, then the farmer would be a whole lot different picture. It wouldn't be near as many bankruptcies, the farmers could pay their bills. They could really stay in farming, but unless this changes, we haven't seen anything yet.
All the publicity about farmers losing their farms, like in the movie Country, which I'm sure almost everybody's familiar with, what can the general public do to bring the interest rates down and help themselves and the farmer?
Well, there's nothing anybody really can do. It's a process that's going to have to evolve over the next year or so. To get interest rates are on their way down. I could never figure why they went to 20% to start with in 82. I couldn't figure the point in that higher interest except to fight inflation. And we had a policy in Washington, D.C. Inflation was the worst thing that could happen to a country. So they checked inflation. Inflation's under control, but the interest run wild. It caused lots of bankruptcies, too many bankruptcies. Even more than I think they had in 1930 in the Great Depression. And there's no way to come out of this situation unless interest does stabilize at a reasonable level. I say reasonable would be below 10%. How much below? I wouldn't say, but should be at least below 10% to make things stabilize again.
We know you own Spalding Tractor Company and you deal with Massey Ferguson Tractors. What other business interests do you have?
Well, we raise a lot of tobacco. We have about a 50,000 pound tobacco allotment, and that has kept us I wouldn't say it had kept her head above water for a while, but without tobacco, my farm and a lot of other farmers wouldn't exist. And I can understand the plight of the people out west and the grain people and the cattle people, what they're up against. They haven't got tobacco to help them pay their bills, pay their mortgages and their interest. And I'm a firm believer in a tobacco program. Of course, a lot of people in Washington think we should disband the program because it's cost the taxpayers, but the tobacco program doesn't cost the taxpayers anything. It makes money for the government. But they can't seem to get that in their speeches when they're on television, in the press, and the radio. They talk about the cost of it, but never talk about the income from it.
Do you think the tobacco program will be around, or do you think it'll exist in a different way than it is now?
Well, I think the tobacco future is short. We geared our farm up 10 years ago to do without tobacco when we opened these dairies, and we're doing fine till the interest rates come along and blew the top off everything. But the tobacco program as it is now, there's been a drastic change this year in 1985. They have to pay 30 cents a pound for the cost of the program. The individual growers donate 30 cents of every pound of tobacco to the government to support this program. And I don't know how long this will last. If after 30 more next year, of course, it's going to make a hardship again.
Do you see farming tobacco farming going maybe as an industry where an industry dies and just hires them like a factory?
Well, we see that in Mexico a whole lot. Tobacco companies lease these plantations down there, and they grow hundreds or even thousands of acres of tobacco. Hire the Mexicans to work in it for a dollar a day or maybe less, and they can produce this tobacco for 50 cents a pound, where the American farmer cannot produce it that cheap because his tractor costs too much and his spray and his chemical and his fertilizer. So we've already seen some of that. The big companies growing huge amounts of tobacco at a contract price.
What advantages can American farmers, cattle, have an advantage over foreign products? What advantage can the farmers give the American people?
Well, the advantage is a better product. We're controlled with insecticides, pesticides, medicine to a real high degree, where a lot of countries have no controls over pesticides and like products, and so you really don't know what you're eating. In this country, if you buy a piece of meat, American beef, you know you're getting something that's clean and free of contaminants.
The USDA is a big part of that too.
That's where a lot of this government appropriation goes. It's the farmer don't get it, but the consumer gets the benefit of it.
Do you have any other business interests besides tobacco and decent dairy cattle farming and this operation?
Well, we have worked for the post office department. We've got a star right we've had for 30 years. That helps. That's the only thing that I have is the tractor company and the farm and the mail route, which my wife runs that farm. Those three things are...
With tobacco farming likely to go out, what crops should farmers use to subsidize their cattle operation?
Well, I really don't know. They keep talking about vegetables, the vegetable market, but our experience in truck guard in this country has been real bad. I think there's been one good plan in Nelson County. A fellow grew 40 acres of potatoes and sold them all to the Gordon Headship people. He made a lot of money out of them. But if everybody grows potatoes, the potatoes won't be worth anything. So we get right back into a cycle where we're going to overproduce, we're going to oversupply. And the farmer has a tendency to get on anything it's paying. If tobacco pays, everyone's tobacco. If dairy pays, everybody gets some dairy. But you've seen the last 20 years, there was only about a handful of grade A dairies in Washington County, and now there's 100. So you can see everybody gets onto the profit wagon.
And with the fitness craze and focus on being slim and all that, what can you persuade people to do, you know, drinking milk and eating beef, because they're technically considered high calorie?
Well, let's eat with moderation anything, but a slice of cheese and a glass of milk and a good lean steak, not going to make anybody fat. Now, if you throw the salad dressing on that hamburger, if they dot the steak with a potato big as a football, you're going to get fat. Mm-hmm. Or eat a lot of bread with it. But dairy products and red meat will not make you fat. It's just a good high-protein source.
Has that publicity hurt the farmer?
I think it's hurt red meat some, but it's helped the fish people and then the turkey and the chicken people. White meat is kind of the thing now. So when they quit eating so much red meat, the white meat people have benefited. And they need to benefit because the pork industry was about gone. There wasn't any profit at all in it.
How much would a drop in taxes in the farmer help out, even a drop of 1% a year?
Taxes, the farmer not bother the taxes. You've got to make a profit before you pay taxes. The only taxes we pay here on our operation is a property tax. That's kind of staggering, but that has to come to support the schools and things locally. But the farmer hadn't paid any income tax now for several years.
To what extent should the farmer plan his crops and beef and dairy cattle? Should it be much in advance or just more spur of the moment?
Well, it's kind of a lifetime thing. If you're gonna farm, you should have a plan. You can't jump from one to another and be successful. You've got to get in the dairy, stay in dairy. You might diversify some, but you have to keep the mainstream like you planned it, don't you? You're headed for disaster.
So you've got to have short range and long range goals as you go along.
Right.
Well, this has been very interesting, Mr. Spalding, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to help us, and I wish you success with your farming and your tractor operation.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This interview was done October 23rd, 1985, and was part of an interview process called the Oral History Project at St. Catherine College.